Good morning, everyone. This is Melissa Merson from the Congressional Budget Office. Thank you for participating in our call this morning. We will begin with a presentation, short presentation, about our newest report called The Changes in the Economic Resources of Low-Income Households with Children by our director, Peter Orszag. That report is up on our website at cbo.gov. Following Peter's description, we'll have a short further analysis from one of our analysts, Molly Dahl, and then we will take your questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone, and you'll be queued up to be recognized to speak. The mute on your phone will be withdrawn at when it's your turn. And if you want to withdraw from the queue, press star 2, and that will remove you from the queue. If you have any other questions after the call, please don't hesitate to call back. And with that, I'll pass it over to Peter.
Thank you very much, Melissa. The report that we're releasing today highlights, I'm going to make 4 points about it. The first is that, as many of you know, income growth among at the bottom of the income distribution over the past few decades has been quite sluggish. In fact, if you take households without children, and you rank them by their income and take the bottom quintile, the bottom 20% of those households experienced no real increase in income at all, that is no inflation-adjusted increase, between 1991 and 2005. The experience for households with kids, however, was quite different. If you take households with children, rank them, and then take the bottom 20% of those households, the real increase in income was 35% between 1991 and 2005. That is the focus of our report, those lower-income households with children. The reason that the primary reason that income rose so significantly for those low-income households with children is illustrated in Figure 1, which is also on the front page, the cover of the report. And as I think you can just see visually from that figure, the major explanation for the overall increase in income, in real income, was a substantial increase in earnings, especially during the mid to late 1990s. Figure 2 in the report shows that if you, again, focusing on earnings, the lowest quintile of households with children experience actually a more rapid gain in earnings than those in the middle of those households with kids in the middle of the income distribution or even at the top of the income distribution. And that highlights something that actually Molly and others at CBO have written about in the past, which is that during the 1990s, the pattern of inequality for all workers, not just households with kids, but for all workers was quite different than for the 1980s. In particular, during the 1990s, for all workers, the lowest part of the income wage distribution basically kept pace with the middle, while the higher part took off relative to the middle. For households with kids, again, though, as Figure 2 illustrates, the bottom actually grew more rapidly in terms of earnings than either the middle or the top. That was the second point. The third point is that attributing this overall increase in income and in earnings to different factors is complicated because there were changes in the economy. We had a period of very rapid economic growth during the mid to late 1990s, but there were also changes in policies, in particular expansions of the EITC and changes to TANF, or changes from AFDC to TANF that affected households in this part of the income distribution. You can see that, again, returning to Figure 1, you can see the very significant expansion in the EITC as a share of income for these households, again, the bottom 20% of households with children, and the reduction in AFDC or TANF income at the same time. And then the final point is that all of those figures that I was just talking about do not have the perspective of what's happening from 1 year to the next for a particular household. And as other work that CBO has recently done illustrate, there is a significant amount of volatility from 1 year to the next in both earnings and in income. In this report, we do provide some figures showing that of the households with low income in 2001, households with children with low incomes in 2001, 60% experienced an increase of $1,500 or more, and 25% experienced a reduction of $1,500 or more in income from 1 year to the next. So that's a broad overview. Basically, the trend is significantly different for low-income kids, low-income households with kids, than for low-income households as a whole, driven primarily by earnings. And there were changes in both the economy and in policy. And there's also significant amounts of volatility that are going on at the same time. But I'll now turn it over to Molly to fill in some more details about what we found.
So I'd like to also extend my thanks for your attendance on this call and your interest in this paper. This paper does examine the economic resources of low-income households with children, as Peter said. It's broken into two sections of the analysis. One is the cross-sectional analysis between 1991 and 2005. So we're looking at repeated snapshots of children. So we're looking at children who are low-income in 1991, households that are low-income in 1992, and then et cetera through 2005. There's also a longitudinal analysis, which follows those households that were low-income in 2001 over time. So examining the repeated cross-sections or repeated snapshots of low-income households with children, EBO finds that income for those children that were low-income in low-income households, in 2005 was $16,800, and that was 35% higher in real terms than it had been in 1991. As Peter noted, this overall change in income was driven by a large increase in income during the 1990s, which was a period of a strong economy, and many changes in social welfare policy occurring at that time. During that period, there was the elimination of the AFDC program, Aid to Families with Dependent Children, and the creation of the TANF program, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. There were expansions in the EITC, and there were also expansions in Medicaid and SCHIP that were very important for this group, low-income households with children. That gain in income during the 1990s was partially offset by a decline during the early 2000s, which was a period of a less strong economy and less change in social welfare policy. As Peter noted as well, the increase in income between 91 and 2000 and the decline in income in the early 2000s were both associated with very large changes in earnings for this group. And one can see both these changes in income and earnings in both households headed by single women, as well as households headed by married couples or households headed by single men. There was a substantial decline in AFDC TANF income over this period, which was particularly important for those in households headed by single women, as AFDC was 42% of income for that group in 1991 and only 7% of income for that group in 2005. Simultaneous with these declines in AFDC TANF income were substantial increases in income from the Earned Income Tax Credit, or the EITC. And overall, income increased from about $600 per year on average for that group to about $1,900 on average for that group from the EITC. So that's the picture that we get from examining the cross-sectional data, or the repeated snapshot. Turning to examining the longitudinal data, that is following those households that were low-income with children in 2001 over the next 2 years, so 2001, 2002, and 2003, EBO finds that average income increased by 45% between 2001 and 2003, reaching $24,100 in 2003. Of course, an increase in income on average does not mean income was increasing for all households in that group. Roughly 60% of households that were low income in 2001 saw their income increase between 2001 and 2003, and roughly 25% saw their income decline over the same two-year period. And for those with changes in income, the changes in income were substantial, both in the upward direction and in the decline. Then we changed the focus of the paper a bit from cash income to participation in in-kind benefit programs, such as food stamps, the free and reduced price school lunch and breakfast programs, housing assistance, and energy assistance. In doing so, CBO finds that many of those low-income households that were participating in those programs in 2001 and still participating, or many of them were participating in 2003 as well. We also examined the health insurance coverage for the child, and CBO finds that coverage was relatively stable over the 2001 to 2003 period, with approximately 75 to 85% of kids reporting or were reported to be covered by either private health insurance or Medicaid or SCHIP. And that stable coverage was due in part to offsetting changes in private and public health coverage. So, for instance, as income fell for female-headed households, private health insurance coverage rates fell, but participation in Medicaid and SCHIP increased.
All right, great. That's a brief summary of the report, and I think what we'll do now is open it up in case anyone has any questions. And you're supposed to press star one if you do. And if we were so clear that no one has any questions, that's fine. We'll just give you a moment in case anyone does. Okay, we have a question from the New York Times.
Hi, this is Eric.
Eric? He was speaking.
Recommendations, but was this, were you surprised at the...
Eric, I'm sorry, we can now hear you, but could you just repeat your question?
Yes, I'm trying to figure out what to make of these findings.
Okay.
I'm wondering, I know you can't make policy recommendations, but were you surprised at the progress? Is that your main conclusion here, or the volatility, or...
If we were going to collapse it down to two key findings, I think the new information is that... Again, the trend is substantially different for low-income households with children as opposed to low-income households as a whole, and I think that the degree of the increase in real income for the bottom 20% of households with children is larger than many people may have suspected. So that's the first point. And the second point is I would highlight the volatility point. We are in a variety of other contexts also doing work on changes from one year to the next. So there are two different concepts. One is inequality or trends in income. Another is how much for an individual household or worker income is bouncing around from year to year. And the second point, consistent with the other work that CBO has done, is there's a lot of bouncing around from year to year. In other work that we have recently done, we found that roughly 15% of workers in any given year, this is not just workers with kids, but all workers as a whole, 15% of workers experience a 50% or larger decline in annual earnings. And that has stayed roughly constant since 1980. This report also finds significant amounts of both upward and downward volatility for low-income households with children. I would note one other point about the trend. At the bottom, again, 35% real increase, which is perhaps larger than many people would have thought between 1991 and 2005. As you go down to, say, the bottom 5% of households with children, the trend seems to be somewhat more sluggish income growth. So the finding for the bottom quintile as a whole is relatively strong growth between 1991 and 2005. At the very, very bottom of low-income households with children, the trends are, again, somewhat more sluggish growth. And there are questions there about measurement and other things, but some labor economists and others have focused particular attention on concerns surrounding the bottom 3, 4, 5% of households with children.
When you say sluggish, how sluggish?
We provide a figure in... Molly, do you happen to... The bottom, is that the bottom?
Yeah, bottom 5% income growth between 1991 and 2005 was 9%.
So much slower than for the bottom 20% as a whole. And it's also worth noting that if you look at any point in time, any year, and you look at the very bottom of the income distribution, there's a non-trivial share of households that appear to have no income and also to no earnings and also not to receive TANF. Raising obvious questions about exactly how those families are surviving.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, the other Eric Black.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. some of the major...
Oh, Eric, could you please repeat your question? You went dead for a second.
All right, starting over.
Okay.
Forgive me if you've addressed this clearly in the report, which I haven't read all the way through yet, but is there a is there any sort of major reason that you have discerned why low-income families with children did so much better relative to low-income families without children?
We have not been able to discern that. It is worth noting that low-income households without children, especially non-elderly low-income households without children, are an eclectic array of different types of households. They include single workers who are younger in their career. It includes married couples later in their career whose children are no longer dependent. And so it's a different, an eclectic, or sort of more varied, I should probably say, group of individuals. We did want to just pull out, in a sense, low-income households with children, because there are a whole variety of policy discussions, including the EITC discussion, including the TANF and AFDC discussion and others, that are focused on those particular households. And given that the trends are so different for those types of households as opposed to low-income households as a whole, we thought that that was worth highlighting and looking in detail at the sources of growth for the low-income households with children, which was the primary focus of this report.
And what portion of all low-income households are with or without children in rough terms?
I actually don't have that number at my fingertips.
Nor even a very rough estimate, so that we know whether it's we're near half and half or mostly one or mostly the other.
I think about, as a rough estimate, I would say about 40% of all low-income households have children in them.
And what is the main contributor to the other income category on Figure 1? What is the main source of other income for families?
So you can see that that's broken out a little more in detail in Figure 3, where we break out the main sources. So the main sources there are Social Security, SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income, child support, are the three main sources there, and then other income is just what's other income?
Like unemployment compensation and disability benefits and a few other small things.
Right, and then the overall analysis seems to call attention to several policy changes that occurred in the 90s, and it's, I have a basic grasp of what you're saying on that. You're not calling attention to very many policy changes that I'm hearing after 2001. So are you at this point assuming that most of the change is economic change opposed to policy change?
If you look at, especially at, say, AFDC/TANF or the EITC, the much more substantial changes were made during the 1990s than since 2000. There were some more modest changes to the EITC made as part of, for example, the 2001 and 2003 tax legislation, but those were much smaller in magnitude than the 1993 changes, for example, which is why you may have been picking up more emphasis on those policy changes during the 1990s. They were just larger in magnitude.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, Mike Dehan, if you could press star one again, I think we would be pleased to answer your question. Mike?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I was just wondering if at the beginning of the report it said that Senator Gregg was the one who requested this report, and I was just wondering if either he or Chairman Conrad had been in communication since this has come out, or what they've said, or what their reactions have been to the authors of the report.
I have not had any direct contact with Senator Gregg or Senator Conrad since the report came out, although, again, I'd note the report came out at 9 a.m. this morning, so
okay,
I guess that's not too surprising.
Molly's here, I don't think.
No, I have not had any direct contact.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's all. Thanks.
Great. Any other questions?
All right. Well, I wanted to thank you all for joining us. If you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to contact Melissa Mearson at 202-226-2602. And thank you very much for joining us this morning.